I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits. Welcome to ABG, Asian Boss Girl, a podcast for the modern day Asian American woman. My name is Helen.
I'm Janet.
I'm Mel.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Mike.
As an Asian American who went to high school within the 2009 era, I was a huge fan of the dance culture and, of course, America's Best Dance Crew. This is where we saw the amazing isolation moves from Mike Song, which then exposed the rest of the youth to the incredible world of dance. As an admirer, I saw how impactful it was for my Asian American peers to see dancers with faces like theirs tear it up on the stage. So when we saw the talents of Mike Song and Anthony Lee come together to form Kinjas back in 2010, it marked an incredible moment in the dance community.
Yes, and fast forward to 2021, the Kinjas have opened up multiple dance studios, also known as Kinjas Dojos, in Los Angeles, Chengdu, and Shanghai, done amazing collaborations with Jackson Wang, Sony Pictures, The Chainsmokers, McDonald's, Toyota, just to name a few, produced a podcast with over 100 episodes, and even created an instant noodle brand called Kinja Bang. Please welcome to Asian Boss Girl, Mike Song and Anthony Lee of the Kinjas!
Woo! I'm clapping for myself.
Yes. I'm clapping for that prepared intro. That was
yeah, that's what I'm clapping for, too.
That was all memorized, yeah, guys. Totally.
Thank you guys so much for being here. As Mel mentioned, dance is a huge subculture and scene in the Asian American community. Many of our college cultural orgs like the CSAs, NSUs, and other Asian cultural orgs had hip-hop dance teams that performed and competed in regional events. So Mike, I know you were on Cabo Modern, and Anthony, you were on Say DC at UCI. Shout out to my team Ascension at UCSD.
Don't forget 220.
220 for a year. During those college years, there were amazing annual shows and events like Vibe, Fusion, Body Rock. There was such a community around dance in college. Was that where dance began for the both of you, or did it start even before that? How did you guys get into dance?
I started dancing in church, so I had a Bible study. It wasn't like on some hardcore gospel stuff, but I had a Bible study teacher who had a sick glide. He had the cleanest footwork. I know it sounds funny, but once I saw that, it kind of blew my mind, and he was my dance mentor. And so in high school, everything kind of erupted for me when I went to this show called Collaboration, the OG show, yeah.
Yep, still going, yeah.
And my sister took me to that. And when I saw that, that kind of expanded my mind to seeing like-faced Asian Americans, right?
Yeah.
Seeing just doing cool dances, just being talented and not just being like your, you know, your normal studying hard. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But just seeing that was super inspirational for me. So from there, I kind of went down the rabbit hole of dance. Fast forward, when I went to UCI, I had already known that Cabo Modern was like in this existing dance troupe at the school. I didn't tell my parents that's why I chose UCI, but in my mind, I knew like
I'm sneaky boy.
I was scheming.
Now they know.
But it's true, the dance teams in college were really quite popular. Mm-hmm. Like it could probably sway some people to go to that school.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Now, now it's a whole nother game. It's evolved into a whole nother era now. But I think at that time, for sure.
Especially if you didn't care about education.
UCI is still a really good school.
But that's pretty much my, in a nutshell, like genesis point. Yeah.
When you joined that team, were you the best one on the dance team?
Oh, hell no. Yeah. No way. Like, that was, I think, for me, a big learning lesson in just like, what is the next level? I think I was in such a small pond in high school that I was just like, yeah, I could dance. And I went to like college and I got checked by just real skill and commitment and just a whole, just another level. Just like, mm-hmm. imagine any sport to me, at least it was like high school level and then college level.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, it was super humbling, but also like I was desperate to have friends that liked dance as much as I did in high school. Like, for some reason, like, my buddies, I would show them dance videos all day long, and I would just see them, like, kind of get annoyed and, like, veer away, and I kind of feel bad.
Yeah.
And then I was, like, so excited. The dance nerd in me in college was so happy to, like, show videos to new people and be like, you want to keep watching it? Yeah. And that was, like, that alone was hype for me.
Yeah. So do you feel like you, or like being in college and being on those dance teams, that's really where your train, like the hardcore training began?
Yeah, yeah, I would say.
How about you, Anthony? How did you get into dance?
Yeah, I actually started in college. I like did maybe like a lip sync in high school, but I think it's one of those things where if I were to actually see it, I don't remember what fully happened. If I were to see it right now, it probably like for sure wasn't dance. There was like no formal training. I was just trying to like emulate like MJ, like every other Asian kid in the world.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I got to college that actually, that's where I met Mike. And I met Mike not even like when college started. We met at like the freshman orientation program. So like when we met each other, like that was at the very, very beginning of my entire journey. And I guess that was destiny.
Yeah.
Wait, so you went to UCI too?
Yeah. Okay. We met at the freshman orientation program there.
Did Mike show you the glide? Is that how you got
into
it?
He showed me a lot more than the glide. He
showed me
a lifetime of joy. You know, he was my original kind of like the carrier of the keys through the gate.
Nice.
You know what I mean? He was a really, really profound friend that would definitely opened the door, but not necessarily, you know what I mean? It was just because he even joined Cobb Modern because, you know, he had his ties and connections. But I, who had like never really learned choreography or done things before, definitely wasn't ready to join like a dance team my freshman year. So I didn't actually audition for CADC until my second year. Oh. So my whole first year, we did UCI CASA freshman dance off. Yeah. We totally thought we were going to win that year. We got smoked. but it's only easy to say that now, like 15 years later. Anyways. And then after that, I guess I was just going to session with him and Victor Kim all the time. And we would be at like the UCI B-Boy Club. And then it wasn't until, like I said, the following year that I ended up feeling like maybe I can audition for a team now. And that's how CADC came into my life.
Why didn't you audition for Cobb Modern?
I was super scared. I was like, that's a great question. No way. You know what? He also didn't go do Cobb Modern.
Yeah, I did.
He kind of did.
Oh my God.
He like kind of did. You know? God. I also, though, to be fair, life just like works itself out. I think there was like some event, maybe like some sort of performance where a B-Boy Club and CADC were at like this joint performance together, and I was just doing stuff with B-Boy Club. And then there was an after party, and then once you like really party with like a group of people, that kind of like ends up being a little bit more of the comfort zone.
Yeah, it creates a bond.
Yeah. So I just kind of like built relationships with a lot of people on CADC. And then
I feel like you had crushes on the girls on CADC too.
Oh, so that's like the real
You know how that goes in college. That's like, that sways stuff hard.
Driving force right there.
You know what? Yes. It's all a blur.
But yes. Wait, were you guys the same year? You all and Janet?
When did you graduate?
I'm 07.
We 08.
08.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So did you guys ever compete against 220? Or
yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We definitely
did. Yeah. Yeah. It must have been crossover. Yeah. You guys for sure with Ascension. And then
yes. Yeah. But if she left Ascension that first year, then I probably didn't compete with you.
I was on Ascension my second year, so it'd be your first year. Yeah, and then my third year, so it'd be your guys' second year. I was on 220.
We did compete for sure. Then.
We competed.
Do you remember? You remember losing to 220 or winning?
To be honest, I don't
think I remember.
I don't think I ever lost to 220.
Oh! That's okay. I have a lot of respect.
He was second to none.
No, I was second to Kaba a lot. That's for sure. I definitely don't remember beating Kaba. But I definitely didn't.
Well, honestly, I am also so curious because you guys have created this multi-layered business, right? Not only are you guys a dance group, but you have so many different silos going on at the same time. What would you consider yourself if someone asked you, like, okay, what are you guys? Are you guys like an agency, a multimedia company, a dance group, individual talent? What would you say you are?
You know, that's the question that's evolving for us right now, that answer. Mm. And so for now, I would say we're a one-stop shop. Like, that's the temporary answer for now. Because we've evolved so much. Like, gone are the days of the company evolving around just, like, when's the next gig or something like that, right? And so I would say we're a one-stop shop. Like, we are kind of everything you said, you know. It is a media company because there are, like, sub-tiers to, like, the mother company. So, yeah, it's a media company. We do clothing. We own studios. We used to run the studios, but we don't run the studios anymore. But as far as, like, what's in our umbrella, I would say obviously performance still, but now it's not even always performing as Kinjas. Mm. It's, like, just even choreography services a lot of the time, right? And so event producers as well. And now we're in plant-based food products.
Damn. Whoa. How did you guys go? I mean, I have a lot of friends who are in college and dancers and super talented, like top of their game. Yeah, and then they end up at desk jobs, right? Because right after college, it's just like...
But like top of the desk type of job. Yeah.
But they ended up, you know, not being able to pursue dance. And I think a lot of people haven't. Yeah. How were you guys able to get from... I like dance, turning into this like dance company and then turning into this multimedia business.
I think just like time frame is like always important to like recognize and acknowledge, right? For us, I think we got really fortunate with our generation of YouTube. So like that was just kind of like an era that even though it wasn't like super intentional for most of us, you know, we just kind of like were doing videos trying to share with our friends and whatnot. That just became a really, really successful portal in the first of its kind for us to share our artistry, like really our own artistry, not necessarily like as a dancer the idea of like dancing for, you know, just another artist or some other thing, like really just creating out of nowhere and then just kind of sharing it online. To have been able to like utilize like social media and that platform, I think we were just given and afforded that time frame of opportunities that allowed us to eventually, because we were sharing our individual work, we started getting like recognized and booked for that, mainly in the form of like teaching and judging, realistically, mainly in Europe at that time, and then eventually it would move a lot heavily to Asia. But just going out there, teaching and judging and performing and whatnot, and this was also an era where the dance TV competition shows really blew up as well. So like combine that plus YouTube, and we just kind of happened to be in really the most fruitful era of like opportunity for a young aspiring and creative artist. And I would like to think that also like for the Asian American at that time as well, because, you know, we weren't really seeing a lot of representation or opportunity in the industry, but it wasn't like nobody wanted to keep dancing and just try it and figure things out. So just being able to get that time frame for ourselves and that opportunity to like take advantage of it and continue to try at it, even though nobody knew what was happening, and evolve the relationship with not only like the platform and like the era, but also like the people that we were trying to, that were connecting with us and we were connecting with. So yeah, I think that was just most of like what allowed us to build a space for ourselves. And then when we had kind of that individualism where we were able to go out and build a name for ourselves or build our own social followings, there was that point where kind of like the Avengers or the Voltron, where recognizing that coming together under maybe more of an idea or versus our individualism could kind of be more inspirational or allow us to even go farther with different adventures that we wanted, you know, for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's super tough, especially for creatives, because creatives are good at being creative, but then you guys got really good at the business side of things too. Like, did you guys do that yourselves or did you bring on someone to help out with growing the business side of things?
I would say we made a lot of mistakes. It started there.
Still happening.
Yeah, still making
What's one of the biggest mistakes that you guys have made?
Oh my gosh.
How long do we have?
I mean, just a funny one. I wouldn't say it's the biggest one. A funny, not so funny one, but funny if we look at it now, is just like when we started our clothing company, just not even thinking about like adding on a sales tax.
For California.
Oh, shoot. That's nasty.
And like realizing that a year later. So just like compounding those mistakes.
And shout out Will, actually, because I went to him for advice because I remember Wong Fu was doing a bunch of... Why did I say what? Phil. Oh, my God. I was saying Wong and Phil.
I was like, who's Will?
Like, Will. Will? Like,
I was like, who's an accountant that we don't know
about?
I could have
said Fong. All right, shit. All right. Phil.
Phil's in the room.
Phil, because I remember asking him for advice when Wong Fu was doing a bunch of merch. And then I remember just getting mind blown by like even the numbers and just kind of the ratio that he was sharing with me in terms of like where, how to make ends meet.
Yeah.
So when we jumped into it.
We had that conversation for sure. Like, yo, Phil said this.
We were mind blown. And we jump into it when we get our, you know, our just getting started. It was like, it was such a small victory, but it's still, of course, you got to celebrate. I mean, my parents came up to like, we were living in a spot called Bangoria in Monterey Park. And my parents came out to our garage and built like shelves and stuff like that, so we could put like our t-shirts in and whatnot. So we were like, yeah, like we're doing it. Yeah. And then once we got like once we learned about taxes for real, for the first time, and it was kind of like, wait a minute, we didn't charge sales tax for California for all of our sales.
That's freaking high too. That's hefty.
It was a very expensive. We made very expensive mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's like not even the worst one by far. Which is not going to get into. This is not a sad podcast.
That's just the one that like we can laugh about now because it's so long ago.
Yeah.
How did it? So then the t-shirts were kind of the merch was the first kind of going into business.
Yeah.
How did it go from that to like dance studios?
Mm. Oh man, a lot of evolution. I have to also add, like, in addition to mistakes, like I feel like we've had so many mentors along the way. Mm. Like we have to also give it up to just mentors along the way where we just learn different things. And studio came about because we did the last season of America's Best Dance Crew also. And it was like the season of champions, even though Kinja's was not a champion or was never on any season. We like
snuck in.
Yeah, we like finagled our way onto that season because we had guys who had been on other seasons. But I bring that up because our goal that season was if we were to win the champion season, we would use that to open up a studio. That was just kind of like this mindset we had. But when we didn't end up winning, shout out Quest. we got runners up, but then our first thought was like, yo, we should do an Indiegogo. And when we did an Indiegogo, we ended up raising like $120,000 to open up our first studio. So that was like the beginning. And even that was just our process of just the beginning. We didn't have any know-how on how to run a studio, but we just had to figure it out and honestly like ask a lot of questions. We held meetings with all our homies who were studio owners, and it really just went from there, asking tons of questions, really.
Yeah. Googling everything.
Yeah.
And we were also able to build a relationship, a very strong partnership with our partner company out of China called Sinostage. And when we went there in 2014 together, it wasn't like on our minds to think like we should partner up and build a studio or anything like that. It was really just a matter of, honestly, we were like, let's go out there, teach, and shoot some videos. You know what I mean? But once, like, we just met the right partner through, like, Coco, who is the, you know, CEO and founder of Sinostage. Once we met her and the energy was just so authentic, organic, the relationship just made sense, especially at that time in our respective companies' careers, too. Like, they were kind of just, like, for real starting off. Mm-hmm. Even though we had started Kinja's in 2010 under this name, Ambu Black Ops, like, we didn't for real turn it into a company until late 2014. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like just the timing of where we were and just the opportunity. It was really, again, probably just destiny, but they ended up continuing their journey as a studio company in China and opening up like 10, 20, 30 studios. So we ended up partnering them more officially in order to continue that journey by opening up the Kinja's Dojo in Chengdu, in Beijing as well. And then we opened the complex in Shanghai and then opened up the complex in LA. And then we can get to that later. No.
I mean, you guys want to talk about
that? Yeah, we can talk about that
now. It was really just the pandemic, you know what I mean? Like, I think straight to the point, because we are fortunate to work on a lot of things, it does kind of get complex sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, straight up, I guess in order to, I don't know, save the body, you kind of got to, like, cut the limb, you know what I mean? And, and that just ended up being probably the most strenuous and difficult thing that we've had to undergo during the pandemic so far. There's a lot of layers and complexities to like how as a larger organization we were going to respond, especially as a predominantly entertainment organization through dance, right? We're talking about like our traveling, our gig performances, like conventions or campaigns where people meet up in live, you know, events. Or for us, when we throw dance competitions like Arena, which are like giant live competitions in the U.S., Singapore, China, all that stuff kind of just got cut out from under us. And even back home here, you know, for the way that they were trying to roll back in to safety and allowing businesses to slowly open up, our category was, you know, especially was under like gyms and fitness and dance studios. So it was like the last place because of the way that the virus could spread. So we just took kind of like a really, really, it was just a big wake up call to how not essential everything that we had kind of like worked on had become. But maybe that's a great transition into understanding why we ended up getting to something like noodles, you know?
Yeah.
What
I mean?
Like, yeah, I think that was like the silver lining of it all. Like in the early days of our studios, like me and Anthony were way more hands-on in running the studios. And I think that we were potentially even being more, we're like on that trajectory still, I think. And I think the pandemic kind of just obviously offset everybody. Mm. But for us, I think in closing down our LA locations at least, the silver lining is that we realized like we didn't know what our potential would be outside of everything being so, like I feel like everything was the immediate half step out of dance, mm-hmm. right? Which was like clothing, whatever, mm-hmm. anything you do entertainment wise, you're like, the first thought you have in expanding is like merch, right?
Yeah, same
and then way. For us is like, okay, after merch, then you're like, we should get a space, right? Mm. At least for dance, for us, the next thing was like dance classes, right? And so like, as we took these half steps out and we're like producing events, I think we realized like, we still had a hand in running these studios, so hands on, but I think the silver lining is by closing those studios, we're like, we really got to reassess like, okay, we feel like Kinjas, we've built it, this dance group to a place where we feel like it's not just a dance group. It's, and not to sound cliche, like not just a dance group, but
not just a dance group.
But I feel like all these like corporate campaigns that we would do, for example, we realize like, you know, if we're like promoting someone else's product always, right? Mm-hmm. We're using dance to promote someone else's product. And then the more just over the years, we're like, everything we do, we should just do this for ourselves. We should just we should be the back end of that, you know, the other side of that deal. And so I think, that allowed us to be like, okay, if this is a marketing engine and this mm-hmm. tool that we have outside of dance, and dance is like our foundation and our mm-hmm. stepping stone, mm-hmm. I think that's where our brains had to get creative, obviously, during the pandemic, and just think like, all right, what else can we do right now?
Yeah.
And
so how the F do you guys get to noodles?
Yeah.
Is it because you guys are always in Asia?
We're fat asses.
Ate a lot of instant noodles during COVID. Like, how did you get from dance? Everything else makes sense, but noodles.
Makes a different kind of sense if you really know.
All right, tell me the philosophy behind this.
Dude, there's no real philosophy that's going to make sense to anybody else. For example, Mike loves ramen, right?
It's always been a dream of mine to open up a ramen shop. Okay. That's like always been a dream.
Mm.
And then I also love noodles. I really love pho. I want to get like a pho tattoo on my left knee because it's like my funny knee. So it's like my pho knee.
Oh my God.
It's very, I get it. It's very stupid. I know. It's the first time I've ever publicly said that.
I almost, out there,
I almost regret it.
Right. We can cut it if you
but,
want.
So we just like always go into just like fun little conversations about it, and we like honestly we probably also eat like noodles all the time with the crew. Mm-hmm. We our old studio used to be next to Daikokyo or Shinsengumi or like just we live in Arts District right next to Little Tokyo. I just moved, but anyways, so it's just always been like a very huge part of our just joy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But we actually had best way to go into this. Our partner, who
mentors.
Actually,
mentors on the topic of mentors,
Our boy Alex, he's very, very much so a mentor and big brother figure for me and Mike. He was actually the creator and founder of Collusive, the clothing line that really just kind of used to hella sponsor the dance community, like 100 back.
I don't know if
day.
You remember, like America's Best Dance Crew. Everyone had these like foil shirts. Yeah. Mm. Anyways, like everybody was wearing these foil shirts. That's Collusive.
Yeah. Mm. And they were sponsoring Cobb at the time when they were on the show as well. And we were close with his Alex's younger brother through college. Mm. And then so that's how we were connected. But Collusive started like sponsoring Cobb Modern and beyond. And then I ended up getting recruited to go work for them. Mm. So I ended up becoming like the marketing director and stuff at Collusive. So we were doing like different campaigns and whatnot. Long story short, that's how we had, and this was over 10 years ago. This was like 2010, 2011.
Yeah, I met Alex in 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was working at Collusive in 2010. And we actually even came up with the name Kinjas in the Collusive office back in 2010.
Yeah.
Back in 2010. But point is, we had to go separate ways just because life, you know, we ended up continuing, like I mentioned earlier, our own individual careers and whatnot. And then we brought it back together for Kinjas for years, right? We always we always randomly stayed in touch with Alex as he continued his journey as well. He's consulting for a bunch of major companies and you know, starting a company here, doing another clothing project here, selling his business here. He's very, very, very serial entrepreneur kind of mindset kind of guy. But we just stayed connected and whatnot. And then, you know, through the pandemic, especially since we would normally, like, I feel like we were always spending over 50% of our entire year out of the country. Mm-hmm. Just, like, traveling, performing, choreographing for different artists, working on shows here, blah, 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 blah. So we were, like, rarely ever home. But being forced to stay home ended up meaning that we were able to, like, have time to reconnect with certain people. And, like, you know, he became one of those people that we ended up getting a chance to reconnect with at a really particular time of life, right? Yeah. I mean, pandemic's particular for everybody.
But I have to say, it was, like, it was perfect time because we had started reconnecting with him, like, a couple times before the pandemic. But it was one of those, like, how have you been? And then, like, so we started this flow of momentum of, like, we got to do something together. And it was, like, very slow. And then the pandemic is when it really just erupted. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'll just feel free.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the noodles. Yeah. Like, how did this guy bring in noodles?
Intro alcohol one night, which is, like, very normal. And we just kind of get into a working flow and whatnot. One thing leads to another. Probably an argument happens about noodles.
Well,
again.
Pause.
An argument happens about noodles. What?
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Because we always have ramen versus pho arguments. But
yeah, I see.
You get it.
I would say ramen.
I think.
You know, I don't have hate for the other. I just don't, like, have to lose. You know.
Yeah.
But Alex, he had already gotten into food products. That's, like, the current venture that he's in right now. Mm-hmm. So that's why we were like, we need to find some intersection between us and food.
Yeah.
And so Alex also loves that. He knows that I love ramen. He knows that Ann loves pho. And so through a night of drinks, it kind of rabbit holed, and then somewhere along the line.
And all of his products are plant-based as well. Uh-huh. So that, like, totally made a lot of sense for us being, you know, obviously, like, we're, as dancers, we're always focused on, like, that half step outside. And one of those places is also, like, fitness, you know, wellness, health, and all that stuff. And we got even some, our own, you know, vegan anchors in the crew, the Twinjas, who always, like, on our crusades and whatnot, they're the quartermasters that are in charge of making sure we eat well.
Oh, wow.
And, like, they oftentimes cook and prepare for us as well. So there was just kind of, like, this, like, also organic kind of, like, melting pot of just this, like, plant-based noodle argument, a lot of alcohol, more alcohol.
Sounds very contrasting right now. Alcohol, plant-based. Yeah.
And then there was just, boom, this huge aha moment that just made sense. We were like, we should make plant-based noodles. And it was just, like, this hilarious thing. And I remember I was supposed to leave. And then once we talked about that, I was like, I can't leave. And I sat down, got another drink, and then I had to leave. Point is, it was just a really, really fun night that just kind of, I don't know, just kind of worked its way up into our lives. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So are these noodles, like, ramen based, or they taste like pho?
Definitely not. I don't want to put the ramen pho title on them at all.
Yeah, sure. I think we had to meet in the middle, though. Right?
Is it clear, though, or is it egg based?
Is it dry?
No, they're not egg based.
Oh, my bad.
Plant based. Yeah, and they are air dried, so they're never fried. Oh. So, which is why we technically actually don't call them instant noodles. Yeah. Because, you know, remember when you were, like, kid and super fat ass and you would take, like, instant cup of noodles and just crunch them or whatever and eat them as is?
As a kid. Right now, but okay.
They are instant, but, like, we can't legally say that they're instant noodles just for whatever regulations, but they are instant.
Yeah. And they're soupless. They're soupless noodles. Oh. So that's what makes it more unique. Yeah. We gotta bring some for y'all.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued now.
You like plant-based?
I'm not vegan, but I'm definitely like plant-based or, like, I guess I practice plant-based eating. And I very much jive with the ethics behind, like, veganism, even though I don't necessarily follow by it, like, strictly.
Yeah, we all got grayscale, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We all got. Yeah, it's a spectrum.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we're just noodles fans. Like, have you guys tried mee goreng?
Uh-huh. Mee
goreng. Oh, yeah.
Is it like that dry style, right?
It's, it's a little bit more, it's like a wet chow fun texture.
Ooh.
Yeah, but it's but not a chow fun noodle at all. Like a skinny noodle, but, you know, like wet chow fun, that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
It's that, so, but it's a little bit spicy and, like, still less saucy.
All right, everyone out there listening, you gotta go try it. Where can they get that, by the way? Where can they order
Amazon.
That? Amazon.
KinjaBangNoodles.com or Amazon.
Cool.
Amazon cool. Prime if you're in the U.S.
Hey,
I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most. And they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
All right, we're going to transition to your personal lives, if you guys don't mind. We do know you guys are really busy. You guys travel a lot for work, and you guys are both also in long-term relationships. Anthony, we know you're engaged, and Mike, you're married. So how do you, in essence, both make a semi-long-distance relationship work?
Long distance? Not long distance.
And you guys travel a lot.
You said 50% travel.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
You go first.
Oh, man.
I want to see what you say.
Well, for me, my fiance's name is Nina. Hi, Nina.
I don't think you're listening.
But listen, you have to listen to this one. So me and her, she was on my old dance team, CADC, as well. Oh. I'm older than her, so I was alumni. And then, so we kind of like just met, knew each other, whatnot. But when we started dating in...
I'm going to say he did chase the girls in CADC. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like, bulb.
Yeah. You know.
So it was a good decision.
Yeah, it was.
So
yeah.
Glad you didn't try for Kava now.
Yeah, dude.
Imagine if you Kava, didn't meet Mike.
Like, I don't need to go on AMDC with Kava and go around the world and be awesome. Yeah, all right. But that being said, when we started dating, I think in like March 2013 or 14, something like that, we went on one date and then I went to China for like 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And then, like, I would come back for a week, and then I would go, like, back out to Europe for, like, 2 weeks. So I feel like we started where I was just always gone, and it was one of those things where it just felt like forever that it would always be, like, the heart grows fonder real quick. You come back, and then it feels like you're in honeymoon mode regardless, just because we haven't seen each other for so long. And then before we can get sick of each other, I got to bounce again. Mm. So, like, it always stayed at this kind of, like,
excitement level.
Yeah. Nice.
Higher level. And also like a higher level. It didn't get like overly deep for a while, right? Yeah. I would always tell Mike too. I was just kind of like, it was really cool. I'm having like a lot of fun and stuff. There's no problem, so I guess I'll stay in it. Yeah. You know what I mean? For a while, because I didn't really get a chance to dive deeper. And actually, it really wasn't until honestly the pandemic that we finally got to stay in one space for like more than I would say 3 months at a time.
Wow.
And this wasn't even like more than 3 months at a time. This is like every day you're stuck in the house, right? So it was just like a really eye-opening experience, and I feel like that really brought our relationship even stronger together. Oh. So it was really cool.
Dang, that's 8 years later for you guys to have like the quiet
2014
time. Okay. 7 years later. That's still like a long time. I think that's like destiny then, if you guys didn't find someone else while you were traveling or while you were away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
true.
That was good. Yeah. Hey, good job, Nina.
No, good job, Anthony.
Oh, hey, good job, Anthony.
Yeah, I would definitely, to riff off that, I would definitely say distance makes the heart grow fonder. Mm-hmm. And that's like our common theme, I feel like, in our own individual love lives. Because so my wife, Addie.
Hi, Addie.
She's, we met in 2009, actually. She's Canadian. And
hi, Canada.
We met judging a dance competition in Toronto, actually. There's so many connections to this. She actually, that first weekend that we met, we like exchanged music, and that was when we knew like we connected.
Yes.
And the song that she gave me was the first piece of choreography for our first ever Kinja's performance.
Oh, wow.
Destiny.
It's a Starry Eyed Ellie Goulding, the Jackwob remix. Yeah. And so, that was our first meeting. And then we ended up being the only judges they brought back every year. And so it was always a changing lineup of judges, but they would bring back Addie and myself. So we kept seeing each other, and then we were both in relationships at the time, so it was one of those like timing, like Andrew in another country kind of thing, for all the way until, god dang, 2014.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, wow. And then there were, but then there was a period of time where we both got deeper into our relationship and then didn't talk for like, there was a dark year. Maybe I didn't even go to the competition that year, but then after that, we both became single at the same time, and I hadn't heard from her, and she was like, hey, I'm gonna be in LA. And I was like, oh, I just turned single. I wonder if she's single. Whatever, right? And then, we reconnected, and it was just like, you know, classic love story. Like, immediately I was like, you're in LA for Coachella this weekend? Okay, I'm gonna get tickets. I'm gonna go too. And then boom, boom, boom. It just turned into fast forward where, we just already knew we had such a long-standing friendship that it turned to a relationship, and we got married really quick. I think that might have been 2015, but we got married in like a year, because I think our friendship had gone for so long, and we just kind of knew by that time. And so, that being said, to answer your question, we're so used to long distance, and she also, she's a dancer, she's kind of a one-stop shop as well, but she travels for work also, and so we're so used to like being apart from each other for so long that it's just normal. We're so used to being away from each other for even like a month at a time.
Wow.
Yeah, months at a time even, actually. And you know, thank God for FaceTime and being in a generation that has FaceTime. But I would say even today, she was just in Canada for a week and she comes back today. Wow. So I almost feel like we're so used to it now. We're gonna get used to even like still traveling, one of us traveling when we have kids, and it's just like that is the dynamic of our relationship. Mm-hmm. We're kind of used to it now. Mm-hmm. But I'm not mad at it, to be honest, because you definitely. Like I said, distance, you get it. Distance makes the heart go fonder.
You guys both started that way too. So it's makes sense.
Flow.
Yeah, it's your flow. Like if I'm from Philip, I'm just like, that's tough. I'm like, a whole week? Would you miss me?
Oh.
Yeah.
He hella does. He's calling me and you're like,
sick answer,
know?
Bro. Sick answer, bro.
You gotta play it cool right now.
We leave. He's like, of course I miss you. Of course.
You're both married and engaged to dancers. How important is it to be in a relationship with a dancer?
Okay, I'm gonna answer this from the perspective of
a dancer.
It's a spectrum because it's not black and white, because I've been in relationships with dancers that did not work at all. So I can't say like, oh, because she's a dancer, that's why it works. I think that's just like a part of who we are and something we do, but I don't think that that's the, there's pros and cons to everything, right?
Yeah.
You could see the pro of that and be like, oh, it's so amazing that she understands this and that. But then on the other side, there's all these things you could complain about too. And they're like, oh, because she's a dancer, there's this. And then you might have different opinions of like, yo, I think that's pretty dope. And they have such a specific opinions about dance and artistry too. And then you have that whole microcosm of a conversation of like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You can go there, right? So it's like there's so many sides to it, and so of course with
there's so much truth in what you're saying.
So a lot of your couple fights could potentially be over dance.
Yeah.
I mean, me and Addie have never had a fight over like dance, like a specific dance. If anything, it's more so fighting over normal stuff, couple stuff, not like actual artistry, I would say. But even still, I would just say it's a spectrum, to be honest.
Would you say both of you have you guys dated non dancers before?
I have, yeah. I have dated.
Okay.
And it didn't work out.
Do you feel like the connection was different? Was the connection different? Like, do you feel like you connect with each other because you share this, like, passion or understanding of dance?
My honest answer is, like, that helps, but it's totally, totally not the reason why. Mm-hmm. It's so much more than that.
Or have you ever dated someone that, like, can't move well?
Who you'd be, like, embarrassed.
That didn't last long. I do remember being younger and being like, it's like, you don't have to be a professional dancer, but if we were to try and dance with each other and it's like not good.
Like if she has no rhythm, it wouldn't
work. Yeah, that could be like a little tough.
I can't
explicitly be like, this is for sure not going to work out, but there would definitely be like a So I remember that feeling hard when I was younger. But later on, it's like, whatever.
Wait, so have you dated one non-dancer? You dated dancers then?
My silence is my Rolodex right now.
Yeah, you gotta,
your Rolodex.
You're scanning.
It's either a lot or like not at all.
They might have all had some connection to dance.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Your community. Yeah. Not
high school. Friends.
Oh, yeah. She was a cheerleader. My high school girlfriend was.
It's like, I know his Rolodex. This is like our freaking our history.
Yeah, my high school girlfriend was a cheerleader. Shout out Jenny Kim.
Jenny Kim.
Was it the other? Yeah, so no, not always.
You said that in a.
Not always.
He's
yeah.
Like,
I just thought about
it.
Said it.
Not always.
Not move. Send it.
Hey, really? Honestly, I just love Nina, so. Nina, are you listening?
So we talked in the beginning about how, you know, dance plays such a huge role in the Asian American culture and community. Why do you guys think that is? Like, where does that come from?
I think there's a lot of theories. Someone's going to do a really good documentary study about this, I'm sure.
Or really like an adequate one.
Yeah, an adequate one, yeah. But my personal theory, observation is just, I think it just starts with culture. I think Asian Americans gravitate to even just hip hop culture, right? Like it's just, it starts there. I think even just being a minority, you identify with hip hop culture in a different way, right? And I think that spoke to us very early. I think there's also like this thread of like, to me, I see even just the fact that so many stereotype, but like Asian Americans are like usually forced to play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I feel like because that's not common with all cultures is my own theory, but like it gives you this foundational understanding of music and timing and rhythm, right? And so we may not be like dancing at parties with our like parents like the way like maybe, you know, Latino culture might be, or you know what I mean? But I think our foundation is just like we do have some like the rhythm and timing and musical understanding that's like subconscious in our culture. And I feel like that mixed with you know, just being fans of hip hop culture and connecting to it is like Asians, like I think that the intersection. But then I think also when it comes to like choreography, you guys know like when it comes to colleges, and then especially on the West Coast and like the East Coast, that's the huge like genesis point of once you join a college, then you see this whole culture of like the Asian student teams, right? Any Asian student association usually has a culture night. And usually these Asian American kids, regardless of what city it's at, are going to try and put together some sort of performance, some sort of hip hop related performance. Well, maybe it's all K-pop now, but like some form of like a hip hop dance performance. And I think that that kind of rabbit hole, and that is where you got all these like people from different backgrounds throwing in their culture into it, where it's whether it's dance or they had some dance training or some classical ballet training or someone who was just skilled at taekwondo but is like really physical and maybe he knows like a lot of athletic stuff, or maybe just athletes or cheerleaders who are really good with formations. And that like melting pot in our microcosm of a scene, I think, was just this perfect storm of just like Asian Americans waiting to just be like, yo, like this is I guess our time, whether we knew it or not. And so I feel like that's part of like this inherent connection between Asian Americans and dance.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's a great answer. I've never thought about that before. I remember, because I'm from the East Coast, I remember the first time I saw like Hub Modern and just like ABDC on, the first time I saw so many Asian people on stage, and I was just like, this is the representation we need. Like, how did they get on stage? And what's the history behind all these people, you know, getting, like, becoming professional dancers, essentially, and getting on the stage? So
the interesting thing about ABDC, too, is, like, you know, same thing. I heard the producers were even surprised. This is just real talk. But the producers were even, like, why are there so many Asians? Like, real talk, they were saying that. And, like, there was even, just to get even more real, we heard that there was even chatter about, like, oh, Asians aren't cute. Like, they weren't ready for that at that time because it was such an influx of Asians, on all the seasons.
You're hella cute, Mike.
Thanks, man, dude. Just off of your point, right? Even as an Asian or not, like, people weren't ready to see that. Yeah. But, like, we came in and, at that audition, you know, like, I think all the college teams, background teams, were the most primed for that competition, that format. You know, there's so many talented crews, right? I think art is subjective, so I wouldn't say that we're the the best. It's just we have our specialties and there's all, I'm not saying that just to say it. It's art, it's subjective. Yeah. But I think the format of that show, like if you're like a crew of like kids who's usually just freestyle and there's like no organization, like a college Asian crew is just ready for this format. Like we need to make a new routine in a week. We got it. Like we're good. You want to log us? We don't care where we practice. We're used to parking structures, hotel rooms. It doesn't matter. Like we had been training for it already. So it was like we were equipped. And I think that like, these MTV producers had no idea. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I also say, like, as I also watch ABDC, and watching Common Honor was the first time I saw Asians on stage, and I was like, wow, Asians look actually really cool. Like, never seen cool Asians before. Like, this is really embarrassing, but watching Common Honor, I were telling my friends in high school, I was like, yo, if I buy a Common Honor sweater, if I go to the airport, would they think I'm in Common Honor?
Because you're Asian?
Yeah, because I literally, I was like, yo, what if they thought I was a Yuri tag, but not really. Like, I legit considered that, because I'm not a dancer, so I was like, oh, this is like, they'll think I'm cool, you know?
Yeah, they probably will.
That's hell and that's the Jabberwocky effect, too. I know every Asian guy in that era is also like, yeah, I'm a Jabberwocky. Yeah. Like, you could just say
wear
it, right?
A mask.
Yeah.
I say it all the time.
What do you think, Anthony, about?
About what, Asians? I honestly feel like it's just, to add to that, it's kind of like what I said earlier about the timing of everything, right? Like, the platform. There were shows like So You Think You Can Dance, you know what I mean, before that like represented like a lot of individualism and even the politics on shows like that. They're not like real reality TV shows, right? They're trying to just kind of like tell a their best version of a well-rounded story, right? And when, given that era, the time frame of even being able to have like crews go on to YouTube as well, it gave Asians a space to just try. And then once, I guess, people recognize that like, we could be, and I say that like seriously, because like there were really the one Asian dude who was on and You Got Served, he's on our crew too, you know what I mean? Like we remember like looking at that dude JD McElroy with the dreadlocks and whatnot, or the cornrows, and it's kind of like there weren't a lot of people repping that scene like super heavy, you know? So finally having like, you know, Asians on TV or like on YouTube, and then just giving kind of just the spark, it's just like the ember that allowed other people to be like, oh snap, Asians do dance. Or I remember it was, what was that like meme term, like dance level Asian, you know what I mean? Like that came about during that time frame as well. And it's kind of like giving just that spark to allow people to recognize like, oh, this can be done. And then suddenly you started like exponentially seeing more people jump into the scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, like even YouTube at that time, and even still, while we're all even still here, is because YouTube had its space for Asians as well, right? There was that whole Asian YouTuber community, right? That like just got a chance to say what they had to say, and people were willing to listen because of the platforms and the time frame. So I think that those unknowingly, they were pioneers at the time. All of us were, you know, were part of just something special. And you know, even for us now, straight up being on like the maybe the tail end of our physical prime, considering like the athleticism necessary to be at your highest, you know, ability, it's kind of like seeing where the culture has gone over the last, you know, decade, two decades, and seeing where it's evolved, especially for the you know, the Asians around the world in general, and how we can now be globally connected through social media, dance, and the internet in general. It's kind of like it has really, really evolved so much. It grew so much, you know what I mean? If we wanted to learn a dance move, he'd be dragging my ass out to like the local club, and we would see that one popper that maybe we saw one video from somewhere like E-Bomb's World or some nonsense. And it's like, oh snap. And then whatever you got from that mode, you had to like digitally try and be, remember everything you see right now. Don't drink too much, remember everything. And you would walk away, and that was it. That was like 4 months of inspiration until the next person you might see. You know what I mean? Like we had that.
Yeah.
And then now everybody, it's everyone around the world is connected through things like dance. And that's just, I think that's just really, really cool.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And speaking of, you know, the booming industry of dance, we're seeing this like large like boom in China for the hip hop scene. I think, you know, for me, I do listen to like Korean hip hop and things like that. I watch shows like Show Me the Money, but I'm seeing this large trend of hip hop becoming a big thing in China. And I feel like you guys have a big role in that. So what role do you guys think you play in this larger movement in China for hip hop?
I think hip hop is maybe too specific a term. I think like I'll be more comfortable talking about like maybe dance and the arts in general, and also in general, more like the bridge between realistically, China is like its own planet. So really getting a chance to even bridge China with the rest of the world has always kind of been like, it wasn't around when we were really coming up. So kind of building that bridge, especially through dance, was already in and of itself like a huge thing. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of hip hop OGs that, you know, would still go out to China and train and stuff. So their ultimately their dance community existed. Mm-hmm. It was just, I would say, you know, and I'll say this fairly because we're coming from like the entertainment capital of the world. We're out here on the West Coast, right? So we were fortunate to be also in kind of like the most supreme version of every part of the culture. But I would say China was like 4 to 5 years behind, you know what I mean, America when it came to like the dance
like choreography.
Choreography-wise, yeah. You know what I mean? They were still very, very like underground, the streets, the culture was very...
the freestyle scene was still like at a high level, but the choreo scene, I think, was it definitely was behind.
Yeah. And so I think one of the most impactful things that we honestly did, again, same thing, I don't think we went there with the intention of being like, this is how we're going to influence this nation. You know what I mean? That was also, honestly, just, I can't believe how far that's gone, you know, thankfully. But we wanted to just shoot videos. And people out there weren't even, like, shooting, like, high-produced like dance expression content. And then also just through the randomness of our relationships and stuff like that, one of the first major videos we actually ended up doing out there as like a choreography concept video back in 2014 was we went to the Shaolin Temple and we're able to, I'm talking like we were already mind blown because this is like the Shaolin Temple. We see this in like all the old Kung Fu movies all the time. And they would never let anybody go in there unless it was like a huge feature film by like Zhang Yimou or something like that. Like, we just happened to have our partner, her auntie was like the president of the educational board at the time for the Shaolin students that like do like actual education outside of martial arts on the campus.
Okay.
So we happened to kind of have a semi in.
Wow. Yeah.
And we went to the temple like 4, 5, 6 in the morning or something like that before anybody showed up. We just shot this video.
Wow.
Right? And then we just kept on doing it. We would always go back to China. We just kept on shooting these videos. But then that became, I feel like, one of the most impactful things that happened to the Chinese choreography dance community out there, because that's how they learned to start being like, oh, I guess it's not just enough to like dance. We can create. And then we can go like, not just film, but really create art, whatever it was, whether it be as simple as like finding a costume and finding a song and picking a location and just putting your camera up to like really thinking out how I want to like tell a story through like whatever inspiration or craft that I've learned through this dance game. And you know, after we did that, and again, that kind of spiraled out, that's I think is when we brought the studios and the dance competition arena out there, that once we started really being kind of the forerunners of elevating the dance culture in general out there, I think that started the trickling of different people catching wind of who we were, wanting to bring us out and work with like specific artists that were very, very relevant and still doing really, really amazing and huge things in the time, the pop culture in China. And then one year after another, we just like ended up working with honestly every artist out there on every major dance TV show, every season. And it's just kind of been like a really, really wild ride.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a crazy story. Tapping into a whole nation.
I know.
And growing the dance community.
But you know what? You know what's huge though? When we're here, no matter what, we're just Asians.
Yeah.
Like the Asian crew.
Yeah.
No matter what, it's like the Asian crew. Like you can't take
it's
that
like
away.
It's a gimmick.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But you can take our style and movement and all of our years of experience away. You put the crew there, it's kind of like, oh, cool. That's the Asian crew. And that's just how it is, you know. But
I guess it doesn't help that we have like ninja masks and like. But continue.
Or it totally helps because we make noodles as well. But when we go over there, we're just on a totally different like playing field and pedestal because they're Asian too.
Yeah.
So they don't look at us and they're like more Asian. You know what I mean? Yeah. They can see the individuals. They can see people. They can be like, oh, I see that person, or I can build a relationship with that person, or I like that character in the story because, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that relatability has allowed us to like work on CCTV shows out there, like the major, every major artist. We sat down with Jackie Chan for dinner.
What?
Wow. Yeah, Jackie Chan. That was the most starstruck I've ever been in my life. I remember just being so nervous. He's like, you like crab? Most expensive crab all China. Right, we went like to this back end spot that obviously probably just like ran. And we go there and we eat, and then after he's like, when's the next time you come to China? And everybody's looking at me, I'm like, whenever you want us to. I'm like, what? Whenever you want us to? Who says that? But the point is, like, in America, like, whatever the equivalent to Jackie Chan is here, I don't, for some reason, I just don't ever see us ever getting a chance to sit down in the room with that person here who runs that, like, heavy of a legacy or entertainment out here. So it's kind of like the way that we are seen as Asian Americans allows us certain opportunities that we're we're just honestly not really afforded over here.
Or there's just way more access points in China.
Yeah.
I think, like, not to say that it's not possible here, but just when we go to China, it's like a handshake away, you know, and like, and it just, it happens like that. And I feel like even just the first time Kenji was like on the cover of a magazine and just did a shoot, and we're just like, our faces, and we're like, whoa, we're just a dance crew here. Like, that's normal. Oh my gosh. And I think that that's exactly what you're talking about.
Like, here it's more about like the get up, the costume.
You know, we lean into it here, you know, and it's natural too. It's not this, obviously, just like this gimmick choice. Like, obviously, we're like anime nerds at heart, and anyways, we've evolved that.
Some of us.
But yeah, here it's obviously different. And we go to China, it just rocks our whole world. Where even when we were there, and you know, we've done even work where like they didn't want us to wear masks at one time because of like the protests that were going on in Hong Kong, and how like that represented that. But the idea of when we were there for you know, whatever work we were doing, to not be masked and to just be like, oh, this is different. But like in China, they'll still know it's the Kinjas, you know, versus anything back home. So
but it's not even just China, right? It's also like we'll be on like TV shows in Malaysia, we'll like be able to throw competitions with government backing in Singapore, we'll choreograph for like every major K-pop label and group, or C-pop, J-pop. Like we can transcend a lot of other higher echelons in the industry in Asia. And out here, it's not to say that we don't have those opportunities, it's just a little bit fewer and far in between is all.
Are you guys still currently doing work in Asia? Or I guess now that things are just starting to open up. So is the plan kind of to put more focus in
international work? It's like a duality at this point. I would say that at one point we were like really leaning into China, but I think now, not that we're not, but I think we're fortunate to be in a place where, it's like there's a duality, I would say, because Japan is this other rabbit hole that we've opened up now. And so a majority of our apparel this year is exclusively available in Japan. And so that's a whole nother rabbit hole where some of the partners we've met through through China, now we're able to create certain pieces and designs that maybe back home is a heavier lift to create. But in Japan, it's way more doable. So oftentimes we are rocking the stuff from Japan and we're like, man, I wish we could have this here, you know? And it's just, but at the same time, we're like obviously grateful that we are able to do these things via Japan and via Asia, really.
Which is also crazy to say though, like I remember just even with like fashion, even when I was working at Clusive, I remember just like getting our clothing into Tokyo would be like the most insane, impossible dream, right? And like now it's like, holy crap, all of our stuff is like exclusive, like in Tokyo and in stores and stuff. But again, I guess I just wake up now older, you know, years later, and just like, it is an easier access point for Asia in general for us, you know what I'm saying? So, but even with the conversations earlier with things like noodles and whatnot, you know, without dance being the only focus now, I think it's just also a matter of understanding where to responsibly and with fun kind of spread our own wings and find other ventures as well. In addition to, as we continue to like even like evolve and grow and mature, you know, what everybody understood Kinjas to be or has understood Kinjas to be, you know?
Yeah, you guys are more of a brand than just like a dance company now.
That is the goal.
You know that moment? You spend hours perfecting that beautiful design, and if you were me, you send it to Helen and Janet to get their compliments. Now it's time to post it on your website and share to Instagram and send to your contacts, but you forget you need to resize everything. Facepalm. If posting your creation everywhere includes reformatting, resizing, redownloading, and reuploading, you need Issue. Issue is the all-in-one platform to create and distribute beautiful digital publications from brochures to magazines and more. It's perfect for creators, marketers, designers, educators, and anyone who wants to make content that stands out. Issue makes content better and works seamlessly with tools you already use, like Canva, Dropbox, and InDesign. Get started with Issue today for free, or if you sign up for a premium account, you'll get 50% off when you go to issue.com/podcast and use promo code ABG. That's ISSUU.com/podcast and use promo code ABG at checkout for your free account or 50% off your premium account. That's issue.com/podcast with promo code ABG.
I'm also curious because you guys started like way, like you're the OGs, right? In a lot of people's
minds.
We're
young OGs.
Young OGs.
We're like mid-Gs.
Yeah. But like having been in this space for so long, do you feel like you creatively tap out sometimes? Because every piece is a piece of art that's unique and different from anything else you did before. How do you guys stay creative?
I think every creative at our age is probably on the same page of like, yeah, you definitely go through. It's like a whole roller coaster, right? Mm-hmm.
Mike's doing these like really cool hand moves that I probably
I'm very gestural by nature. But yeah, I would say it's just like a relationship at this point. Mm-hmm. I think I am married. I'm in a lifelong relationship with dance. Mm-hmm. And just like any relationship, you know, you have to work at it. You have to accept that it's not always going to be perfect. But at the end of the day, you come to this point where you're like, oh, I'm in this. Yeah. I'm in this for the long run. And now I think it's just managing that relationship with it, finding ways to still keep it creative, of course. But at times, I think even being okay to be like, I'm not going to be creative like for the next 2 weeks because there's so much to work on. Yeah, yeah. But like, we'll find our way back to it.
Mm. Did you feel like during the pandemic, your creativity went up or did it kind of go down?
At the top of the pandemic,
it's the bomb.
I'm laughing because... Okay, top of the pandemic, you know, there was like, I don't know about y'all, but the first couple of weeks of the pandemic, when you didn't realize how long it was going to be and like the true reality of it, there was kind of this like, oh, we can't meet for work. Like, oh, I'm at home. Like, what do I feel like doing? Yeah. Right. And so like we all like picked up these like hobbies. as far as creativity goes, like, well, I guess knitting is creative too.
I picked up fishing, but. Yeah, continue.
I started rapping and practicing rapping. Oh. Anthony started producing music. Like, we were just feeling so creative. And I was like, we were on one. Like, every day, I was like, I'm going to write a verse every day. And I was just in it. And then he was like, yo, I'm going to play this beat for you. And we're like, woo, let's go. We're like, so creative. And then when the world shifted, especially America during the pandemic culturally. I don't want to say shifted, but I think you guys know what I mean. When everything started happening, I think that's when it was like zero creativity for everybody, right? It was just like, you're just like, oh man, okay, this is our reality. So to answer your question, creative in the beginning and then not creative, and then it started going in a bunch of different directions. I guess creative, and we had to get creative as far as business goes. Everybody's creative, by the way. I just want to say, and for whoever's listening, this idea of like,
disclaimer.
Yeah, like, like the idea of like, oh, I'm a creative or I'm an artiste. Like, I'm so, I think there's creativity required in every job. Straight up. If you're a producer, you're a freaking admin, I don't give a crap. If you're great at your job, you are creative. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to find creative ways to solve things. And so I guess it's hard to say. I guess we were being creative at other points too, that maybe front facing might not seem creative, but it's like, yo, everything's creative. You just have to figure shit out.
Yeah, that's definitely the season we're in. I feel like to co-sign on that, it's like, if I hyper focus on like my dance artistry, then like absolutely, I go in seasons where I'm like, in my mind, I'm like amazing. And then like other times I'm like, I'm so insecure. Mm. I like cannot do it. I'm actually in a season where I'm like not really like, I don't know where my dance creation is, but I stay creative if I don't hyper focus on dance. Mm. I'll be creative exactly like how he's talking about. Like, you know, with us, with what we have to do with like the clothing line or the studios or like, you know, picking back up the podcast or the noodles or anything that's going on. There's other ways that like we're forced to stay creative, even if it's creative problem solving or like adapting. I feel like our minds are always being exercised in that way. It's just whether it's like dance art or just like life in general. So I feel like I allow myself to be okay that I'm not like super in my mind creative with like artistry because I'm exercising that in everything else that I feel some sort of like fiduciary duty to like respond to.
I think it's really interesting you guys say that everything you guys do is creative, because a visual question I had for you both is that you guys were dancers. So transitioning from a dancer to like a CEO, right? Mm. Or running a company, it's kind of requires a different side of your brain. But if you were to reframe it as everything I do is creative, you're going to tap into, you're going to feel fulfilled in some way, right?
Totally.
Yeah. You know, I was just talking about this with Ving, one of our other creative directors in Kinja's. It's funny because maybe that's where I still feel tied to dance even, right? Where I do, like how I just said, I think there is creativity in everything, but the only thing that I realized still I had to, I came to a realization today in a conversation where I was like, but at the end of the day, when I'm being like really creative, and in my own mind, creative with like, you know, whatever tasks it is or whatever, right? Problem solving as far as like the back end of our business goes, I'm not necessarily extremely fulfilled. I'm like, it's done.
Check it that is box. Complete.
Yes, but like when some like creative, or I don't say creative, but some dance piece or video we've done, when I've completed something like that, I still am like, I have a different level of fulfillment at the end of it. So I think that is still something that I'm still like finding the flow of even where, to be honest, just like my personal flow of like, do I lean more into this or do I lean more into this?
Yeah.
But like, I just know that I don't know, I'm currently at the, I can't let go of like, you know, movement, dance, and film because I know that I have a different feeling when I complete that. Even though I enjoy and respect this other side, it's the feeling at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's good that you guys have built up this business so that you can stay creative in so many different ways.
I mean, back in high school and college, I feel like a lot of girls may feel this way, like they were attracted to the dancers or the cool Asian guys, right? Feel a little intimidated when you go to like high school dances or the club and you want to dance with a dancer guy, but you're like, what if I suck? Or like, do you guys pay attention to the way they move? Like, I think, well, Anthony answered the question earlier, but wait, do dancers grind like at the club? I don't know.
Well, that went totally somewhere I didn't know it was going
to
go.
I was trying to figure
out. Think of like, how does a girl impress a dancer? Like, is it with her dancers? Or is it like,
talk about grinding.
No.
Here's the thing.
You ever get in trouble for grinding? I totally did.
Yeah. Get in trouble for grinding?
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, no, totally not.
What? Where?
What?
In what context?
Like high school dance.
No, 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 high school dance.
Oh. No, we had wristbands.
A Christian private high school.
Yeah, it's just like a high school.
In my high school, we had wristbands. If you grinded more than twice, they cut off your wristband, you're kicked out.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Then you had more than twice?
We had only once.
Wow, there were grinding policies?
Yeah, for sure.
Is that just like a butt up on someone and that's grinding?
I had the facilitator of the dance. He was like some other PE admin or something like that. Yeah. I remember I was dancing with a girl. He literally walks up. And he's like, get your leg out from between her legs. Wow. I was like, oh, snap. And he's like, thank you.
Whoa.
I'm going to be like, whoa, that was sobering.
Yeah, kill the vibe. But yes, because I heard like, I don't know, I feel like I'm under impression like guys who are dancers at the club or whatever, like they move really well. I don't know if that makes any sense.
What are you asking?
You know what it is? I have some friends who are dancers. Some of them say like, oh, at the club, I don't grind. Like grinding isn't a thing with dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that true?
I feel like we're speaking about
like back in the day.
Dancers as if dancers are like this ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
oh, that's true.
Scale of like we are, you know, the same. Yeah, there's so many. You know, we're all different types of human beings in all shapes and sizes and orientations. But I would say, okay, to answer that question, I don't have a black and white answer for that. It's a vibe.
Okay.
Right?
It depends on where the night's at.
Yeah, you're talking about like a classic freak league, right?
Yeah.
I always loved a good freak league. Yeah, absolutely. It was a very, very good freak league.
I think it just depends on like where the night's at.
And the music.
Because some people could be like, I'm not going to go to a club and grind with a guy. And then it's the right weekend. It was the wrong week. Whatever. And then you're shots in and then boom, you're like, you get it. So it's a spectrum.
Yeah, but you got to also think about it like this. Like, we're a group of dudes that dance with other dudes always.
That's true, huh?
Like, we are always dancing with dudes.
So maybe it doesn't quite take that much to impress.
Yeah, you know?
There you go.
I think it's a vibe. My own personal opinion is a vibe. Because a girl who maybe was, like, super, I don't know, good at dancing or whatever. But it's there's a spectrum. Because maybe she's, like, she's just going off and you're like, whoa.
Maybe that's too much.
You're like, yeah, this is too much. And then it could even be a girl who maybe she doesn't really move, but like her just spirit, it's just spirit, yeah, right? You could just sense whatever vibe she's on and she's just like, she might be cracking a joke and it's super awkward, but if the vibe is just right, then it doesn't really matter, right?
I'm so real right now.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm more basic, like for sure. There's some girls that like, they can't like dance on their own, right? It's like, but man, they can move their hips the right way. You know what I'm saying? That's what you're asking about,
yeah,
right?
Not everyone are dancing.
I'm just saying. You know, and you know, us trained, skilled professionals out there, us men who are really good at dance, we know when a good hip mover is, you know, there. That's all. Freak a leak.
Cool. Got my question answered.
She's like, so you guys want to go to the club tonight, or?
Sounds tiring. All right. Well, our next question is it too late for us to start our career in dance?
Nah.
Never too late.
Never too late.
I don't even know how old you guys are, but I would still say no.
Yeah.
I'm a year older, I think. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many things that, like, career is such a, even that is such a spectrum nowadays, mm-hmm. right? Like, we were so pigeonholed into thinking that a dance career was one way when we were mm-hmm. probably, like, starting off as younger dancers, mm-hmm. Whether it be, like, you know, dancing and performing in the industry, dancing behind an artist, you know, choreographing for artists, like, three more things. I don't even know.
Okay. You know, it's a segue to so many things, right? And I think a lot of people in our, even in our company, are like former dancers, and whether or not that was professional or just danced in high school, it's turned into something completely different and they're just somehow connected to it. I think it's like, you know, for an analogy, it's like someone who just loves music, like, or even like, let's get super specific, like I've always like loved rap or something mm-hmm. like that, right? And then they're like, oh, maybe I'm at whatever age, but it doesn't mean I can't like work in, you know, whatever, A&R or management mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. or just be a sound designer or whatever it is, right? And I feel like it's the same way. You can be attached to it. If you're passionate about it, you can find your way, whatever skill set you've already taken your time to like mm-hmm. sharpen. There is a way to like attach that to dance, I think, mm-hmm. to anything really, right?
Yeah. All right. Can you teach us your favorite, easiest move that non-pro dancers can pick up? I'm going to whip out my phone for this.
Yeah, it goes like this. You take your fingers like peace, and then you close them and you turn them. You go Kendra Bang. It's the easiest one.
Yeah.
Do it over now?
I have to do it again? Okay. You go with peace, but then you close your fingers, you turn it, so you show the side, and then you go.
Sounds good.
Can you do that, Mel?
Yeah.
I got you. I forgot what he did. All right, go for it. Peace.
Uh-huh.
Turn, and then.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Something like that.
Game's good. Look at Phil's face right now.
He's like, ooh. I'm not a dancer. All right, that's our promo for this episode. Damn it.
All right, last question before we do a quick round of fun questions. What is the best advice you've ever been given that you always go back to?
I feel like Mike's gonna say, it's a vibe.
I don't have one at the top of my head, to be honest. It's not one singular one. I would just say, I mean, I kind of go back to this as far as like at that point in my life, my sister said, because I'm an econ major, even though I was dancing.
What?
Yeah.
But, too, right? Econ major.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, like, honestly, like, my dream in college, even in college, was like, if I'm just on a sick team, I get like a cool job in the daytime and I just crush stuff at night. Like, because that's what I thought the pinnacle of being a dancer was. Yeah. Like, that was all I could process. But when I was deciding on pursuing dance as a career, just testing it out, my older sister, Jerry, she just told me, if you're going to pursue any sort of creative career or career in dance, you should just treat it like just the way you would a 9-to-5, if not more. Like you should be, and because you like it, it should be a 9-to-5 or dedicate more time to it than a 9-to-5 would. And I think that's the only way that like I'll have your back and I'll help you convince our parents to have your back. And I was like, okay.
What a good sister. Yeah.
I always turn to like this one quote, which I can't like say word for word because I'm not that good. But it's by Eckhart Tolle. This is, for some reason, it always pops up at the right time in life because it will, I guess the quote, he says something like, life will give you whatever experience is necessary for the evolution of your consciousness. Like, how do you know this is the experience you need? It's because it's the one that you're having at this moment. And I feel like that has always been something to like allow me to both like celebrate when something was successful and also be like, okay when something was like not going well. You know what I mean? So it just kind of like gave me a different perspective on just like the way to approach how I'm experiencing things in life. But in terms of advice, I think that we're always trying to like build idealisms for ourselves because we know how like human we are through every experience, especially as a crew, you know, and especially as family where we get to check each other. So I think I would want to take a moment to like share that like we have mantras that we like continue to try and practice and dedicate our understanding and kind of like continual like learning through, you know, when we say things like respect all, fear none, you know, maybe it's a cool tagline, but like where it came from and what it means to us is something that we choose to always remind ourselves when we say it versus something that we choose to like preach. We tell ourselves to respect all, we tell ourselves not to fear things because we fear things, because we have to learn that lifestyle, you know. When we say things like movement in the shadows, like for us and what that means to us about like what it takes to outside of the limelight, the type of work you have to put in and how you have to keep on like going at it, you know what I mean? Those are the things that we put in place as like advice to ourselves sometimes because we know how difficult the journey is and how imperfect we are.
That's so beautiful.
That was very profound.
Very profound. Hey, that's awesome.
It's a cult. You guys are
cult. It's a cult.
So for four easy payments of $39.99.
You get a free box of Kinja Banks meals. All
right, last, this is a fire round.
So it's a quick fire round. So you have like maybe 5 seconds to answer we'll start. So one question, you guys will both answer the same question.
Okay. Thoughts on TikTok dancers?
TikTok dancers? I think that the way that we had YouTube, they have that. And, like, congratulations to them. But, you know, I will say, make, like, a 5-minute piece of art. And then we'll have a conversation in the same room. But I respect it crazily.
Okay. Cool. Mike?
Hardcore love-hate relationship. With TikTok. Right. Not necessarily the dancers, but with TikTok.
With TikTok. Yeah. Second question. First dance move you ever learned?
Circle glide.
Oh, yes.
Circle That's glide. Totally not like the real term for it. It's actually called the moonwalk. I'm not a super dancer right now. But like
that's the first move you learned?
The real moonwalk is in a circle and then like the media changed the name. Anyways, it's like a circular glide.
I think the first thing I also tried to emulate was MJ doing the backslide or backglide, his version of the moonwalk. That was definitely the first thing I tried to learn.
Okay.
Michael Jackson. Okay. Artist you want to work with?
Daft Punk.
Oh, I was going to say.
I know. That's why I was looking at it. I was like, should we 3-2-1 this?
No.
But then if we didn't hit it, it would suck.
It's all good. You take Daft Punk. Okay.
Fine, I'm going to take Daft Punk.
I'll say Christopher Nolan.
That's also really good.
Okay. If you weren't dancing, what would you be doing?
Composing soundtracks.
Okay.
I might be like a chiropractor. Why is that funny?
That's just so random.
Sorry.
<I don't>
All right.
You might need me to laugh. But...
You do have a gift at that. Now that I think about it, yeah. Anthony is oftentimes the healer. Or that's like your new title these days. I feel like you've been doing it more, like massages.
Okay.
You
know? Yeah.
That's
right.
You like to crack it back.
Biggest misconception of being a dancer?
Biggest of being a dancer?
Being a dancer.
You're rich?
Fire round.
I'm sorry. When you like meet a dancer and everybody for some reason, give me a demo. But it's like not always the easiest thing, especially without music or like genuine inspiration, because dance is more of a feeling than it is like a presentation. So I think people it's like a monkey versus like an artist.
Yeah, you get put on the spot a lot. Yeah. Happens every time at weddings.
Always. Right? Oh, you're a dancer, do dance moves. It's like, wait a minute.
It's like, wait, you're an accountant, crush some numbers right now, you know?
So. That's true. Would you say the same thing then? Same answer?
Sure, I'll take that one.
Hey.
Go.
All right, favorite and least favorite music genre to dance to?
Oh, favorite and least favorite. Oh, it's so transient. It's so. It always changes.
Favorite and least favorite. Both are K-pop.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, favorite's K-pop too.
Yeah, it's because of the love-hate relationship with it, right? Okay. Because like, we love it because like I think most people normally love it, but when you have to like be a creative to all the K-pop songs or artists all the time, you're constantly like listening to a new artist or like their track like 1,000 times in order to figure out how to choreograph to it, or like the way that you might perceive your artistry when you like create it and the way it comes, like it's too detailed, there's too much connection behind the scenes, so it becomes a love-hate relationship.
Interesting. That's really deep. Sorry, but I don't have a love relationship with K-pop.
Just the hate.
Not the hate. I mean, I love old school K-pop, but that's another story. I would say love, just musically, I just really, really vibe with like the wavelength of like Kendrick and J. Cole. You know, it's just, that's my vibe. I would say, not even just a dancey, but, and then least favorite, oh man, I will say like, the crazy pitches of like weird mumble, like that, it like doesn't move me at all. Like really far rabbit hole mumble. Some I can get to it.
It's purist. That's Kendrick and J. Cole.
Goats. Yeah, so I'm just like rapping rap. Goats. Different genres. so limited.
I'm all like K-pop. He's like, you know, Kendrick, J. Cole. Crap.
All right, would you rather dance with only your arms or only your legs?
I still have all my limbs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Only feet.
Dang, one or the other. Probably feet. Probably only feet. If you had to take away one, you'd just be like this the whole time with your arms if you couldn't move your legs. That'd be wild.
That works too, though.
Yeah, it does work.
Yeah. We do that as a drill, by the way. That's like sometimes like when we're practicing and you do like different exercises, it's like a limitations drill to just like, so you practice. It's like practicing one part of your skill set. But... You say hands or you said feet?
I would say if I had to only, I would go with my legs.
Dang, I think I would go hands.
Oh, okay. I normally move more with my hands, but I think I couldn't.
Take the cover and stand with them.
Because I think I have,
We're friends.
How would your friends describe you in one word?
The Vince Vaughn of the dance community. Sorry, that's a lot of words. let me take that back.
In one word?
In one word.
Gemini.
That's a good one for you. You're very Gemini.
Thank you.
Hardcore.
Thank you, see?
What does that mean? What's Gemini. One word to define a Gemini?
Like split.
Two extremes.
Okay.
Coexisting. I don't know. How would you describe me? Like,
that's Anthony.
Honestly, I am. I gotta say, like, I mean, yeah, that's not like indicative of my personality.
Yeah, he knows that I'm not saying anything.
But it's true. I eat in our circles. That's nothing with personality.
Yeah,
it's
just, like, it's true.
I just eat like crazy. People like look at me and are like, whoa, and I just like really large portions. That's just how
hidden
I
talent.
He's like obviously not fat, so it's funny if I'm fat. But he's also the guy who's like we'll all order together, and then when everybody finishes their order, he's like, "You got your order?" And he's like, "Oh, wait. Let me get like two more of these to go." and you're like, "We just sat down."
I love it.
Planning ahead.
But it's amazing. Yeah.
Learning a lot about you right now. Last question.
All right, who's a better dancer, Anthony or Mike?
Mike.
Oh, subjective. No, dude, subjective. It's art. I was just saying, you can't compare anything. It's so...
You didn't say Anthony.
Gunslinger.
Well, I don't believe...
Mike is also like one of my dance senseis.
No, Anthony, we have such different strong skill sets. You know what I mean? Anthony can do so many things I could never do straight up.
Head spins, back flips.
It's straight up true. But like that's, I think the beauty of it is, I think it truly is. It's like music. Right? If you're like, yo, he's better at this than that, you'd be like, no, I just like this and this person likes that.
So. That's why they make the perfect team.
That's true.
Yes.
Oh. All right, y'all. What is next for you both and how can our ABG community support you?
I would say right now we're on like a micro level. We're in the Arts District right now. So we have a residency at The Row. And so it's a pop-up studio. We're teaching classes there and we actually operate out of there as well. And our kinesthetic store is also there. So if you want to come visit us and you're in LA, you can come visit.
Cool.
If you want to, I guess, even just reach out to us, everything's digital as well, right? Our store is online, digital, all that. As far as like future projects, man, a lot of the stuff we're working on right now, we can't talk about. And that's the exciting stuff. But I would say Kinjibang Noodles is, there is a, we have a really big announcement coming in 7 weeks.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
And so we can't say it now, but in 7 weeks, it will be much more accessible. That's all I'll say.
All right.
Yeah, lower your expectations.
But it's whack. It's whack.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. But in 7 weeks, I'll probably be drunk AF.
Awesome. And then where can everyone find you online?
At Kinjas on every platform except for YouTube and TikTok.
Are on YouTube?
Yeah.
Huh?
You guys are on YouTube.
No, it's the Kinjas.
It's one of those tiny things.
The Kinjas, and then TikTok is Kinjas Official.
Who took your name? Kinjas.
So YouTube Kinjas is like some guy in Africa on like a guitar. has like 200 subscribers or something like that.
Oh, we've like emailed out, but you know, to no avail. It is what it is.
Got it. All right. Search all the Kinjas and you'll find them, okay? All right. Well, thank you both so much for being on our podcast today.
Thank you. Yeah, we want to say that before you just outro. Thank you for having us. You know what I mean? When you say, like, how can the ABG community support Kinjas and whatnot, it's like we're here. And to be connected is actually really, really cool. So thank you for having us come into this very, very, very luxurious, amazingly clean, amazing Wong Fu office. Yeah, it's super AC in here.
I'm standing by to turn this all on.
Thank you. No, really, though, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, I felt like we were just chatting with old friends.
Yeah, I love it. This is awesome.
If you don't already, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review, and share this episode with your friends. You can also support us through monthly donations at anchor.fm/AsianBossGirl/support or get some merch at AsianBossGirl.myshopify.com.
If you resonated with today's episode, let us know in the comments of our IG post. And if you'd like to put faces to our names, you can find us on YouTube, where we share vlogs, an audience Q&A segment called Dear ABG, and much more. Our handle on both platforms is @AsianBossGirl.
And we have a couple of shout-outs for today's episode. Amanda wants to thank Erica in Arcadia, California for being her biggest, most selfless support system. She is so lucky to be your baby sister. Aww. May and Dennis in Vancouver want to thank Angela, aka Jell, for being their sweet cupid bringing them together 1 year ago. Aw, double aw. And Daniel and Katie in Boston want to congratulate Anita on her new job. They are so excited for you in this next chapter. If you'd like to send a shout out to a friend, check out our link tree and our link in bio on Instagram and click on shout outs.
If you'd like to send a shout out to a friend, check out our link tree and our link in bio and click on shout outs. And last but not least, thank you to our super talented editor, Michelle, for working all her magic on our episodes, including this one.
And we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye!